anniversary of the Blues Brothers today, Chip.
We're on the mystery. We're on the mystery. We're on a mission from God, Steve.
Yeah, this is not Sherlock Holmes, Chip. You have to switch. Right. It's a totally different show.
It's like a mystery. A mystery of who that lady is who's got the flamethrower. That's why I keep asking.
The mystery lady. We have some guests with us today, Chip. First off, we've got Matt Miller. How's it going, Matt?
It goes well. Thank you very much. My name is Matt Miller. I am a video game world record holder, and you can find me and my gaming partner, Michelle, at our Twitch page. It's twitch.tv/TeamMayhem, M-A-Y-H-3-M.
Thank you for joining us, Matt. It's wonderful to see you.
Thank you,
Will,
for having
Nexi.
Me.
What's up, Will?
Hey, what up, Steve? How you doing?
Doing all right, man. Los Angeles is beautiful this time of year.
Yeah, it's a lot better than where I'm at.
Yeah? A little warm today in Phoenix?
Just a tad. 110.
Where would our listeners find more information from you and all the stuff you do?
I just basically run the 372 Pages podcast fan group on Facebook, facebook.com/group/372pages, and facebook.com/WoNexi with the capital N, two I's.
Nice work. John Cohorn, the smart one, is here. He's going to give us the lowdown on this movie. How's it going, John?
I'm doing pretty well. So I was dubbed not too long ago by, I think it was by Dane, as John Comedy Sucks Cohorn.
Yes.
Horror is my usual wheelhouse. You can find me hanging out at modernhorrors.com. But it's actually been kind of cool to dive back into the comedy end of the pool that I've disregarded for so much time. This was a blast.
Nice. What's everybody drinking? This is a fan cast. I'm sorry. This is a party cast. That's what we're calling it now, right? So what's everybody drinking? Chip, what do you got?
Steve, I went with the Chicago area Crystal Lake Brewery there.
Crystal Lake Brewery from the north side with your south side accent. Good job.
I do my best, Steve.
Matt, what's your go-to for today?
I'm going straight homebrew Lipton iced tea unsweetened in a
nice.
Solo cup.
Excellent. Will, we know that you're partaking, right?
Oh, yeah. I got vodka and seltzer, and I've got my bong as usual.
Nice. And John, what are we going to see you become a different person by the end of the evening with?
Well, right now I am sipping on Garrison Brothers Balmoray, Texas bourbon, aged 5 years. When I'm done with that, I'm going to have a sip of this Leopold Brothers American Small Batch Whiskey that a friend of mine in Colorado sent me.
Very good. I'm starting off with the Jack Daniels, then going to the Ballast Point Grapefruit Sculpin IPA out of San Diego, because they bought a whole bunch of that for me when I got here to Los Angeles.
If anyone faints, did we bring any brandy and soda?
Get some brandy, quick. Somebody needs brandy if they're fainting. That's the one thing that we've learned from Sherlock Holmes, boys.
Lots of brandy.
Are those with bottles allowed or required to throw them at the screen when they're done?
Exactly.
Chicken wire.
Up first.
Well, chicken wire.
Okay, I've never seen Roadhouse.
So let's get started. How much did you enjoy watching this movie this time?
Pain don't hurt, Steve.
You enjoyed it, Chip?
Pain don't hurt.
So you didn't enjoy it? Give me an answer.
Did I enjoy this? I was glad I went through it. In my memory, it was much better than watching it again. But I can understand why a person who loves Chicago would love this movie.
Matt Miller, what did you think about watching The Blues Brothers?
You know, it was the first time I'd watched it in about 25 years. So coming in, I was really nervous about whether or not this was going to hold up. And as, you know, I mean, 25 years ago, I was a teenager, whether or not it was going to have the same kind of impact and resonate with me as an adult. And it did. I actually enjoyed it. It was a little lengthy at 2.5 hours of the director's cut, but it held up. And I mean, come on, you got to love all the action. It's nonstop action.
Lots of crashes.
It's Warner Brothers cartoon action, isn't it? It's so ridiculous.
It's Michael Bay before Michael Bay, really.
Yeah. Definitely over
before
the top.
CGI. This was all practical.
Yeah. Didn't have enough lens flare, Steve.
Will, what'd you think?
So this is the first time I've ever seen it. I'm not really into blues music, and I'd never been to Chicago, so
Wow.
I mean, I never really had any interest in seeing it before this. I'd always heard about it before. And it was pretty cool, I gotta say. My cat thought it was cool, too. He just joined me.
I heard that, yeah. Joining us now, Will's cat.
Yeah, joining us now, Isis.
Isis, one of Will's cats.
Yeah, John, one of the three.
John, what's your feeling?
I had a good time with it. Matt mentioned, it had been a very long time since I had seen this, probably in the 15 to 20 years range, just because, like I mentioned earlier, comedy is one of the least represented genres in my watching routines. It does kind of stretch what I feel is kind of that sweet spot for comedy in terms of the length of the movie, but it's got such an incredible cast. It's got great music. The car chases are ridiculous and over the top. So I had a really good time with it.
I have watched this movie probably more than any other movie in the history of filmmaking. This is my favorite movie of all time. I watched this one when I was probably about 7 years old. My parents went to go see it at the theater and came back and raved about it to my grandmother, who didn't understand a word of what they were saying. Like, what the heck are you talking about? What do you mean that this was funny to watch car accidents? Car accidents aren't humorous. What's wrong with you? And they tried to explain it and she just didn't get it. So they rented this movie, and I was able to watch this movie with my parents and my grandparents on my grandparents' lanai in Sarasota, Florida over Christmas break, and I just fell in love with this movie.
So how is this movie rated R?
Just for language and violence.
It truly is cartoon violence.
It really is. Yeah. It really could have probably squeaked into the PG-13. They probably had to count up the F words in it, and it was right on that line.
Add a few extra in there just in case, you know.
Just in case, just to catch that R rating. I love this movie. I love everything about it. I love the story behind the creation of these characters. Dan Aykroyd was from Canada, or is from Canada, I suppose. He's not quite dead. He started working with the Second City in Canada and then got connected to John Belushi somehow. Found out that John Belushi was from Chicago and was raving to John Belushi, You were born in Chicago? You must love the music scene from Chicago. Belushi had no clue about the music, and Aykroyd was the one who had to encourage him to be a part of this whole idea.
Belushi knew where the cocaine was.
There is that. There is that. Belushi was certainly well known for his habits. That's for sure.
They had an intervention filming this film.
Yeah, there was.
There was. They really did. They came into his trailer. He had a pile of cocaine, and at that point they had to stop shooting. I guess I think they moved it back to L.A. or something. But anyway, they had an intervention with John. John, you got a problem.
And you can hear it. I mean, in a couple of the scenes, you can hear it visibly, and you know, as he's breathing, you can hear the nasaliness. You can tell there's signs. Okay. It's not just a cold.
No. Nope.
I don't know if this is true or just completely hearsay, but I was looking up some background information on the movie and some of the making of it, and I believe this is an entry on the IMDb page, but at least it is out there that cocaine was included in the budget for the movie, and that pretty much everybody cast and crew was using at the time.
That was the time. That was absolutely that late 70s, early 80s cocaine. Yeah.
They had a Blues Brothers bar that was also part of it as they were filming, you know.
Okay. Now so we've got a House of Blues.
Oh, well. You had to start somewhere.
I love the House of Blues.
Bigger.
So Carrie Fisher was a part of this movie. She was certainly trying to break out of her Princess Leia role, and I think she did a pretty darn good job of it.
Definitely. I'm sorry. Definitely against type of what you'd be used to seeing her as at that point in time. I don't remember the first time that I saw this, but it was as a kid, showing on television edited. But the thing that kept me watching at that point in time, because I must have been like maybe 8 or 9 years old, was Star Wars Phantom and knowing that Carrie Fisher was in it.
She was born in 1956. So if I do the math real quick, 1980 minus 1956, she was 24 years old. Still a very young, very pretty Carrie Fisher in this, but she was powerful.
But she knew everybody. That was the other thing, is that she knew everybody. Mm-hmm. And part of it is part of growing up with her parents. And then as we watched, what was it? The documentary on HBO, where, I mean, from Eric Clapton to George Harrison to Paul Simon, who she ultimately married. I mean, she just was an insider of Hollywood and insider of music.
And she was engaged to Dan Aykroyd at the time of
this
film.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
They never got married, though, right?
Correct. They never got to the church, but they were engaged. She was a part of this crowd, for sure.
Well, we learned at the end she loves Jim Belushi. I mean, John Belushi.
Nobody loves Jim Belushi. According to Jim, nobody loves Jim Belushi. Got John Candy in this one. Very out of normal for a John Candy role, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Was it? I mean, he's a Canadian.
Yeah.
And so did he know Dan Aykroyd from, you know, his comedy troupe or anything like that?
I don't have an answer to that, Chip. I don't know where the John Candy role comes from. He wasn't a part of Saturday Night Live, so that's not the line where he gets in.
He
was Second City, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was with... Was it UGTV?
TV show, yeah.
Yeah, SCTV, yeah. Okay. So that's Second City, the Canada version. Okay. So that... He worked really well in this, but he mm-hmm. was very much... It could have been anybody. It didn't have to be John Candy, but the fact that it was John Candy added something. Orange
what
whip?
Is orange whip. Orange whip. Well, I was going to say...
Three orange whips!
He eventually winds up in the 18-wheeler, you know? And then later on, was it...
We're in a truck!
Yeah. Later on, he's in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you know, in an 18-wheeler going to Chicago again. So there you go.
There is that Second City connection to Chicago. The reason it's called Second City is because that was the term for Chicago. And so Candy, even though he's not a Chicagoan, he is from Second City, which is very fun.
Correct. Charles, he did end up in a truck again in Home Alone as well, with the polka band.
Oh, polka. Was I missing it out. I got the wrong one.
Right. That was Home Alone.
Yeah. Sorry. So just,
going to Chicago there. You're to Shermer. Going to Shermer.
There ain't no Shermer in Illinois.
I wonder what their favorite team was, Steve.
The Bears. We don't have a TH. Speaking as the Southsider in this conversation, I got to tell you, we don't have a TH. We take off the TH, and most of it's a duh. The Bears. Charles Napier, who played Tucker McElroy, the lead singer and the driver of the Winnebago, did a fantastic job in this.
Yes.
I bet he plays both types of music, Steve.
Country and Western. We're not even to the quotes part. This is such a quotable movie. This is a movie that is so quotable. We use the... Even if you haven't seen it in 25 years, do you say some of these things in real life?
Absolutely.
I say these things all the time. All day long.
For the young people, if they would ever listen, they're not going to get this at all. Because they will have never seen this movie.
You should. Kids, go watch this movie. I know it's rated R, but it's not really... It's not a bad, dirty movie. It is. There's F words. That's it. I don't know that there's any other reason for
and
the R.
Violence against bands.
And police violence.
Vehicular destruction.
And if you see Blues Brothers 2000, don't pick it up. Just Blues Brothers, not 2000.
Never saw
it. They tried really hard on the sequel. They wanted to make that for so long, and it took them 20 years to make it. And it's not great, but Paul Schaefer's in it at least.
Wasn't Paul Schaefer originally part of the band?
Yes, Paul Schaefer was a part of the Blues Brothers band that toured around the country and part of the Saturday Night Live band at the time. And he was not able to become a part of this movie. And that was very frustrating. But it worked out okay. We got Murph instead. The Murph role was supposed to be Paul Schaefer. So you could see how that would be interesting. The Shea Paul dinner scene with Paul Schaefer as the guy trying to convince the boys not to be at the restaurant would have been interesting, at least. Jeff Morris plays Bob of Bob's Country Bunker.
I'm Bob. I'm from Bob's Country Bunker.
I love Bob's Country Bunker.
Here's a list of the songs you can play.
That ain't no Hank Williams song.
All right, boys, play Rawhide.
That's all they can think of is the theme to a TV show. That's my kind of comedy right there.
And they play it not just once, but twice.
Yeah. Right.
They open the show, and they close the show.
That's right.
Got a little standby your man in between.
Exactly.
Little Tammy Wynette.
The horn section's favorite song.
And you know what? They got paid $200 for that night and spent $300 of beer.
Sounds just like a party cast. That's about right. You guys are going to make $200 and drink $300 worth of beer tonight.
So how much do you think beer's worth that time? $2?
If that. I mean, they weren't drinking well. They were drinking weren't drinking good. They were drinking shitty beer.
Yeah, those weren't $16 for a 4-pack IPAs or something like that. Those were Pabst.
All I can say is whoever.
Well, I would say probably Budweiser during that time.
I saw a lot of Miller Lite bottles.
I thought it was Miller Lite. I was hesitant to say it, but I think it was Miller Lite, wasn't it?
There were a lot of Miller Lite bottles on the stage when it shows them wrapping up afterwards. When he comes up to talk to them about money afterwards.
So how do they film a scene where they're throwing bottles that are going to break against the chicken wire?
Those are all sugar bottles. It's all sugar glass. That's not real glass. How much fun would that be to be the guy throwing bottles at the band?
Well, I love this effect that, you know, when they were angry, they were throwing a lot of bottles. And when they were happy, they were throwing a lot of bottles.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the person at the end of the night who had to clean all that up definitely was qualified for hazard pay.
That made me laugh. It took me back to, like, mid-90s here in Austin. A friend of mine that I worked at a restaurant with was a drummer in kind of a punk rock band. And before their shows, they would put chicken wire up in front of the stage and they would hand out buckets of fried chicken, and people would end up throwing fried chicken and beer bottles at the chicken wire all night.
Waste of good fried chicken.
I know.
Is that Southern culture?
Making
me
hungry.
No. They were a local band called Mr. Groper.
Okay. Well, Southern culture on the skids used to throw fried chicken to the audience.
Man, I could go for some fried chicken right now.
It's a broken glass?
Nah, just the fried chicken. I'm good.
So we get to the Nazis in this. Illinois Nazis.
How the hell was that put in this movie?
Statement. This whole movie is a statement about race relations, isn't it? Mm-hmm. This is a whole, very much like Blazing Saddles, this is these two white guys raised by this black guy in the basement of this church. They are in that culture. And they hate Illinois Nazis.
Well, everyone
does.
The acronym for the Nazi group is basically asswipe. I forget what it is. It's the American Socialist something.
White People's Party.
Yeah.
Well, they helped him get clean.
Nice touch.
They got to jump into the river.
Yeah, that's the most silly Warner Brothers cartoon way that they could have possibly fallen into the river.
With the profound statement, "I hate Nazis." And then just driving over the bridge, and they all jump in the water.
Well, that kind of stood out to me because this came out in 1980, and if I remember correctly, the very next film that Landis had in theaters was American Werewolf in London. And there's also Nazis in that movie. So he definitely had a theme going on right there.
Gee, what a time to be alive when people were saying that fascism is bad, being anti-fascist.
Well, how about, you know, the number of police that get, you know, they're almost cartoonish. Yeah.
I wrote down in my notes as I was watching this, how many cars were wrecked? Because the number of police cars that they trash through this movie is just insane.
I want to say it's on the Wikipedia page.
It was a world record. I looked it up after the movie. It was broken, I think, a year or two later. But at the time, it was a world record. 103 cars they destroyed.
Wow.
Wonder what
Full
entertainment. It.
Well, that was Cars for Clunkers right there.
Yeah, my girlfriend said that what they did was they went to some town that was replacing their entire fleet of police cars.
Yep.
And bought all their used cars and just trashed them.
Not to mention the mall that was about to be destroyed. So they went ahead and drove through that mall to destroy that. But the thing is that stood for like 5 more years afterwards. After they destroyed it, the deconstruction did not happen for another 5 extra years after that.
Wasn't that in Park Ridge?
I can't remember.
What was interesting is seeing all the brand names. So they had Casey Penney, who was almost in bankruptcy. We had Toys R Us, who went through bankruptcy.
Pier One, who's about to go out.
Yeah. It was just like a who's who of who's going through bankruptcy now.
Yeah. Oldsmobile was in there. Jewel's still doing okay.
I will say, I love seeing movies with mall scenes from back in the late 70s, early 80s. There's just something that's, I don't know, kind of nostalgic about it.
It's iconic. The mall was so important to our lifestyle then, and it's iconic. Well, yeah.
But they did trash the shit out of it. And at one point, I was sitting there wondering about, like, okay, are they getting paid for product placement? Because as they're driving through the mall, occasionally they'll just be like, oh, there's Pier One.
Disco pants and haircuts. Yeah, well, this mall has everything.
Well, I was thinking a little bit of that too, because I read a little bit about how the movie was written and the script. He didn't have any idea. Dan Aykroyd had no idea how to write script. But whatever they learned here eventually must have passed on to like Blues Brothers. Not that they were part of it. I'm just saying that, not Blues Brothers, Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Because whatever they learned, they were like, okay, make sure we have a song. Uh-huh. Make sure we have products to sell. Make sure we have this.
So you think the Dan Aykroyd line, who you gonna call, Jake, is a line that then led to the Ghostbusters movie, Chip?
It could be. Well, I know the Ghostbusters, they interviewed a bunch of people to write whatever that theme was going to be, and Ray Parker ended up winning it.
That's right.
And Huey Lewis came along and sued him.
That's right. You got a weekend to get this together. Oh, Huey Lewis song's on.
You got Kathleen Freeman as the sister at the beginning. She did a fantastic job. That is
the penguin.
The penguin. That's right. I don't know about you guys, but that is very similar to my experience with Catholic education on the South Side.
What, they always come to you asking you to pay the property taxes, Steve?
Property taxes. It doesn't make any sense. It is too completely illogical. But yes, there's always something. There's always something that you need to do for sister, and she needs it done, and you go out and do it. That's my lifestyle right there. A female human being comes to me and says, I need this. I get out of my chair, and I go and I get whatever it is.
He was conditioned early.
You got to love her official billing, too. Sister Mary Stigmata is her actual name.
Yes.
And there is that big, creepy crucifix, like, hanging just above her office door.
And the close-ups, the cinematography on this film is just amazing. The close-up of that to show the creepy face, the frightening thing that is religion for these Catholics is brilliant.
And the acts of violence against both of them as they sat in their little chairs.
Getting whacked with the ruler.
And then they break the ruler only to pick up another instrument.
Right, she's got them ready and waiting on her desk. And I wasn't certain, but it seemed like The one she was using at first was wood, obviously, but I think the one that she pulled out as a backup was metal.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. If the wood doesn't do it, you get out the big metal whipping stick and you go to town.
Oh, yes.
Did you catch Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman,
as the waiter?
Yes. The waiter.
Oh, yes. I had completely forgotten about that. Or maybe it wasn't in the version that I had previously seen. I probably just forgot about it, but my eyes lit up as soon as he came on screen. And he's just there for like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
He was nobody at the time. He wasn't really Pee Wee Herman yet. Now, here's the interesting fact. He was just on an episode of To Tell the Truth that I watched last week. He did a guest gig on To Tell the Truth dressed up as a weird cosplayer. And at the end, he's like, "And I'm Paul Rubens." Ha ha! It's like, oh, man.
Well, yeah, I guess I don't really remember when his HBO special came out.
It had to be around that.
I was thinking like maybe 82 or 83, but I could be wrong.
It's certainly after this.
Yeah.
Well, he had tried out for Saturday Night Live and didn't get in. HBO. I'm going to look that up because that was around the time, because that had Phil Hartman in it.
Mm-hmm.
And
Lawrence Fishburne.
1981.
Okay, right cool. There.
I was thinking it was a little bit later than that, but yeah, they must have been filming this like right before he went into that.
Mm-hmm.
Full Spice. What?
Full Spice?
Well, that was from the Pee Wee Herman show.
Okay, we're not going to the Pee Wee Herman show. We'll do that. That's a different show. We'll do that another day, Chip. Frank Oz as the guy who's in charge of the stuff that you walk into jail with was hilarious.
Right.
Hey, he was enforcing social distancing, too, with making them keep back.
Unused prophylactic and the soiled one.
One soiled. Yes.
And $23 and something.
Okay.
That
now,
was so
boys,
bad.
Boys, right. Boys, you might not know this, but I'm a huge Muppet fan. So when we were watching this and I was like 7, my father turned to me and goes, "That's the voice of Fozzie Bear." I went, "No." And then there's a Miss Piggy reference later in the Toys R Us.
In the mall.
I was going to say, if I was going to do a total recast, I would make Frank Oz the guy who's looking for the Miss Piggy toy. That way it's kind of meta, get the voice of to do that.
But that guy looked just like Bill Murray.
Yes, he did. I thought it was Bill Murray.
It's not.
Are you saying Chicagoans have a look, Steve?
speaking as all the fat white people on this show, except for Will. Okay, yes, I do. Twiggy. Speaking of fat white people, Twiggy shows up. Remember Twiggy? Hey, everybody, look, it's Twiggy. What was her career?
Wasn't she a model? And I think maybe recorded a couple of pop songs.
Yeah, I think it says, you know, model, actress. Yeah, like basically just a pop culture figure in England.
Famous.
So. They were having parties, and she came over and got a bit part.
and the joke about how Elwood asks her to meet him at the motel at midnight, and she shows up is hilarious. Yeah.
I felt bad for him as they're driving off. I'm like, oh, man, you missed this hookup.
Yeah, he missed out. He had to run from the cops.
That's a great payoff. We got a couple of people who became famous later. James Avery, yes, Uncle Phil himself, was one of the dancers in one of the dance scenes. And Mr. T was in one of the scenes as an extra as well.
Because, oh, wow.
Yeah, they got everybody.
Was he able to do the jumping splits or the flips? Or what was he doing, Steve?
James Avery? Yeah, he was a true dancer. Mr. T was not in the dance scenes. He was in one of the other scenes where they drove by, but he was there.
So James Brown's church is the Baptist church.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, Baptists and Catholics are both represented in the South Side.
That's right. Oh, yes, sir. This is absolutely a Chicago movie, maybe the Chicago movie, representing all of the culture of the South Side of Chicago. Stephen Williams was the cop.
See him. I was actually just looking up to see how early in his filmography this was.
And what results have you found, John?
He has 4 credits prior to this. His first one was in Cooley High in 1975. So between that, he had been in a short film, a TV movie, and another feature. But this was probably, well, I would say easily the biggest thing he had done up to that point.
And then he got
to do a car chase, right?
Yep.
Am I wrong? Is his biggest role 21 Jump Street? Is that what he's most known for?
That's what I've always thought of him as, was the captain from Jump Street.
So he's good at playing cops. Really strong, really important cops. He did a great job in this one. Mm-hmm. Steve Lawrence shows up as Stein, not Sline, in the sauna scene.
I don't think he was doing a lot of manscaping at that time, Steve.
I love that sauna scene. That is such a sight gag, such a stupid sight gag, but I love it every time it pops up. It makes me laugh every time.
I chuckle when they cut back and everybody's in there. I mean, that's the big pop is that, you know, you think it's just the two brothers in there negotiating and the entire band's in there. It's great.
No reason. And then at the end, Steven Spielberg has his cameo.
Yeah.
Yep. So that was him.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. The clerk, yeah.
My girlfriend thought that was him, but we weren't sure. Interesting. Yeah,
one of the very few roles that Steven Spielberg has taken on as an actor.
Once again, I'm wondering how much Carrie Fisher had to do with roping people to be in this movie. It was her connections, like, we're doing a film. You might as well come over, Steven.
It is. You are right. I'm surprised that George Lucas was not given a cameo role in this. There is certainly a Star Wars connection here between Frank Oz, Carrie Fisher, Steven Spielberg. It's right there. Then we get into the musical guests, and my goodness, this is the music movie. Now, when I teach theater and I talk about musicals, I say that this movie is not a musical. It does not fall into the category of musical because the characters do not sing about their situation. Yes, they sing, but not about their situation.
Yeah, think is not about
I think qualifies.
Yeah.
That is certain, but that is certainly Aretha Franklin's song. Yeah, it works. Yeah.
And it's such a low budget film; they didn't even have time to wash her waitress gear.
You think that the South Side is known for its filthy waitresses? Yeah, Chip. Welcome to Maxwell Street. Okay, so Maxwell Street no longer exists. They shut it down. They bulldozed that whole area. But before that, it was the place to be, the place to go for food, for music, for culture. It was, there was a flea market all up and down Maxwell Street. It was great.
So if it's the place, why are they bulldozing it down?
This
is where the racism comes in, my friend. This was the black area that was the place to go for culture and food and the flea market. But the white people took it over and gentrification happened. And now it's rich white people's places that exists on that land.
On the south side of Chicago?
Maxwell Street is barely south side. It is south side, but it is just inside. It's right there.
What's your favorite basketball team there, Steve?
The Bulls. So, musical guest. This is full of wonderful music. I love every note of this music. James Brown as the preacher is perfect.
He's got the hair for it.
And Chaka Khan behind him in the choir as the
choir.
Soloist.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is not exactly my upbringing musically, but I love blues music and I love James Brown's ability. This is one of those songs that is in my rotation that this is toe tapping, joyous, religious music.
Yeah, they said that both he and Aretha Franklin had some issues doing lip sync because it's not a natural part of their act, and that James Brown just decided to re-record his stuff live while, you know, Aretha went through the multiple takes and eventually they got the good takes.
Interesting.
Yeah, there is a
kind of like Kubrick. You just wear him down. Eventually, they get it.
You know, when you sign a music talent and you ask them to not be music talent, to be an actor, it's a different set of skills for sure. Cab Calloway, the at this point almost unknown because his music was from the 30s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But wow. To bring him in and to have Minnie the Moocher, that was my song, by the way. Whenever we had a gathering of any kind, they would put on Minnie the Moocher and make me sing. Just so you know.
And you would walk around, you'd have your slumping arm. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, and that's the funny thing, too, is they said that Cab was actually lobbying to get a disco version of that song in the movie, and Landis convinced him to go traditional with it, which thank God he did, because it would not have held up had it been a disco version.
And he also had to re-record that, I believe, too.
Really? Well, I'm wondering if they met Cab Calloway in New York, because he died in New York.
I don't know that, Chip. I don't know he was.
They were part of Saturday Night Live, and you know Schaefer knew a whole bunch of people, you know, and the band, the Saturday Night Live. I'm sure they had who's who of anybody kind of stop by, and they may have met him. And you know, I was looking at him and go, oh, did Cab Calloway have a Chicago connection? No. So they must have just met him and just said, "You're the coolest. Come do something."
John Lee Hooker gets his song in on the streets of Maxwell Street. That is so Chicago.
How.
Before he had to sue ZZ Top for that.
Did he sue ZZ Top?
Yes, he did. ZZ Top stole how. Yes.
How can you steal?
He won, Chip. This was clear.
How does that happen?
He sang how first, and ZZ Top stole it. This is a very open and shut case, Mr. Watson.
Are you insinuating that white rock acts stole from black art musical artists?
No,
I'm shocked.
Elvis.
I'm aghast.
No, Elvis Presley, I'm not.
That's a revelation.
This is about the music. This movie was supposed to be about black music, cultural music, blues music. That was Danny Aykroyd's intention. And we get so much great music out of this, but he really wanted to do it better. And he thought Blues Brothers 2000, the sequel, was going to feature that music so much better. And the story just doesn't come together the same way that this one does.
And the funny thing is you get more than just blues music in this movie. You get some country, you get some classical with Ride of the Valkyries, you even get elevator music. You get the girl from Ipanema in the elevator ride up. You know what I mean? So there is a wide variety. You know, bass level rock and roll with Jailhouse Rock. I mean, it covers a wide spectrum. It's not just a blues centric. It is heavily slanted and rightfully so towards the blues end, but it does represent a wide spectrum of musical genres.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say, this is definitely not my kind of music. I usually listen to electronic dance music, like drum and bass type stuff. But I enjoyed this music. Like, it was catchy. It was good. It's not my stuff, but I like it. Yeah, it's toe-tapping.
It is toe-tapping. Even, you know, the music that you don't listen to, even the music that you don't like, you can't not get out of your seat when James Brown is singing at the church. That is get out of your seat toe-tapping music for sure.
Yeah, that is one of the prevailing themes of the movie is music's ability to uplift and inspire. You see it in the church. You see it in the neighborhood. You see it in the bar. You see it in the prison at the end. You know, I mean, it is one of those universal things. Now, we may not all like the same kind of music, but music's ability to lift spirits is universal.
Sometimes the keys are tired, you know.
Good country key.
Well, no, not the country keys. When they're trying to buy all the instruments.
We'll get to quotes. We'll get to quotes. We haven't gotten to quotes yet.
Ray is getting ready to play a little bit. These keys aren't tired.
And how about that Ray Charles, huh? How about that Ray Charles?
He pulls out the gun and tries to shoot the kid that's stealing the guitar.
Here's the thing I want to mention. There actually is a diehard connection to this movie. The young man who tries to steal the guitar, the actor, Devereaux White, plays Argyle in Die Hard, the limo driver.
No way.
Yep, I recognized his face right away. I was like, I got to IMDb this. Yeah, same actor.
Wow.
8 years later, he's driving around John McClane to Nakatomi Tower.
And I love the quote.
And Christmas will never be the same.
That's right. I love the quote from Ray Charles. It breaks my heart a young boy that a boy that young going bad, and he takes out the verb to see in that sentence. Breaks my heart, a young boy. And then he walks from behind the counter to the piano and says, excuse me, with the biggest grin on his face, because he knows the joke is he's blind and he doesn't know where this guy is, but he knows where this guy is because of blocking. That makes me laugh every time. That was, I love that scene so much. We get to the band. The band here is mostly the Saturday Night Live band with a couple of additions, but these are some of my favorite musicians. I've never spoken to any of them, but I have emailed every single one of these guys who are still alive to see if they had something to say for the 40th anniversary of Blues Brothers. We start with Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn. They had a radio show for a long time before Duck unfortunately passed away. Steve Cropper is an interesting musician. Murphy Dunn, no relation, the guy from Murph and the Magic Tones. Murph and the Magic Tones?
Yeah.
Well, that's got to be a takeoff on, you know, the Bill Murray lounge singer act.
Yes, I assume that is the lounge singer act from Bill Murray, but Murph was added. That so again, that was supposed to be mm-hmm. Paul Schaefer. That was supposed to be Paul Schaefer's role, but Murph was added. Willie Too Big Hall, the drummer, was also added. That's not their original drummer. Tom Bones Malone and Lou Marini were both in Paul Schaefer's David Letterman band.
Oh, awesome. Mm-hmm. It's a small world when you get to that level.
Mm-hmm. I just love the part where he tries to sell his gear back to Ray. He's like, yeah, I'll give you $350 for it. He's like, we bought it for $8. It had shag carpeting on it.
The shag carpeting on the Marshall amps, right?
Yeah, depreciation, man.
The bitch.
And Alan Rubin as Mr. Fabulous. He was a part of the touring band. He was the horn for this band. Fantastic.
Did they tour around for a full tour or a couple of years, or were they kind of like the Lieutenant Dan band type thing where they just go up every once in a while?
I think they mostly toured around Los Angeles. I don't think that they went too far outside of Los Angeles, but they did play the what's the big theater around here?
Holiday Bowl. Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah, the Hollywood Bowl. They did play the Hollywood Bowl. And we do have the album from that, and it's fantastic. They were just drunk and out of their minds with cocaine and playing music and loving it.
What's to complain about?
Yeah, it's fine. It's all good. They were living life. They were loving it. John Landis was the director. We've already talked about him a little bit. He went on to do a... He was a horror guy mostly, right, John?
Not really. It's kind of funny because Landis gets credited with being a horror guy. And even when Showtime, you know, 15, 20 years ago did that series Masters of Horror, mm-hmm. he had a couple of episodes there. But really, the only thing that he's done on a feature that I consider full on horror is American Werewolf in London. You know, his first movie Schlock has aspects of it, but I wouldn't consider that a horror movie. If I'm not mistaken, he did, didn't he do the Twilight Zone movie or one of the segments of the Twilight Zone?
The Dan Aykroyd man, there's something on the wing segment. That was Landis, yeah.
That was Aykroyd. Aykroyd was, do you want to see something really scary?
Yeah, you want to see something really scary.
Okay, sorry. I thought that was the same guy who said there was something on the wing and then they put him into the... All right, I forget. It's okay.
I mean, he gets a lot of credit for doing American Werewolf in London and for doing Michael Jackson's Thriller. But if you look at his filmography, the majority of it is not horror. And I guess In the early to mid 90s, he did Innocent Blood. He did that vampire movie. But most of his stuff is comedy. He did like Coming to America and Three Amigos and Spies Like Us and
Trading Places, Animal House.
Great stuff. Those are classics.
Definite classics.
And Dan Aykroyd and John Landis are credited as the writers of this. Dan Aykroyd being the force that made this movie happen because he really wanted to highlight the music. That was his idea. Produced by Robert K. Weiss, who went on to produce the Sliders TV show. So I'm a big fan of Robert K. Weiss and his work. He's mentioned in Blues Brothers 2000. They list a whole bunch of people, and at the end they go, Robert K. Weiss. And one of the other characters goes, who the hell is Robert K. Weiss? And executive produced by Bernie Brillstein, who, of course, has his name on so many classic comedies. All right, so should we get into the scenes where all this stuff was filmed? The Joliet Correctional Center is still standing to this day. It's no longer used as a prison, but is used for all sorts of things. One of our local Blues Brothers tribute bands actually played at the Joliet Correctional Center last summer. So,
what is it now? Is it a bar or something?
No, it's not being used for anything at this point, but it's still there. It's a beautiful facility that
it brings joy and happiness to everybody. Yeah, it looks like
especially former inmates.
It looks like Northern Illinois University. I don't know why.
It's that same castle architecture, that same architect, I'm pretty sure, did those castles all over the state of Illinois.
It looks like a prison.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We see the bridge jump across the East 95th Street Bridge over the Calumet River and Calumet Harbor. So a lot of south. Calumet City is very south of the city. Our buddy Ron grew up in Cal City. And Calumet Harbor, that's where the bridge jump happens. The orphanage is on 18th Street The orphanage is on 18th Street at South Normal Avenue. That's in the city.
What's their favorite hockey team there, Steve?
I don't know. We don't watch hockey because old man Wirtz didn't put it on TV for 20 years, so we didn't watch hockey.
Well, I would say they're the Blackhawks, Steve.
Duh, Blackhawks. That doesn't even work in the whole joke, Chip. The Triple Rock Baptist Church is the Pilgrim Baptist Church on South Burley Avenue at East 91st Street. So that's still standing. I really should go take a tour and go to all these places. Again, the Dixie Square Mall, that was in Harvey, Illinois, but it was knocked down about 5 years after the destruction of... Can you imagine in today's... filming to say, hey, we want to knock down this building, come drive cars through it for a couple hours. That was amazing.
Well, there's got to be a lot of dead malls around. Well, they're not that difficult to tear down. I know that there's one that showed up in Stranger Things and a whole bunch of movies. And they must, in L.A., it must be in L.A., that they've totally, like, remodeled it to make it look like an 80s mall, and they just film everything there.
And again, that mall culture, that late 70s, early 80s mall culture, that we were all going to the mall, we were all mall rats, and
grab an orange Julius there, Steve.
Orange whip?
Orange whip.
Orange whip.
Three orange
whips. Orange whip. Orange whip.
Elwood, so what's the difference between an orange whip and an orange Julius?
No difference.
I have no idea. I don't know that I have ever heard of orange whip outside of the Blues Brothers, but I read that I think the costume designer on the Blues Brothers was the daughter of the guy who owned Orange Whip, and he specifically asked them to put it in the movie.
Oh, yes.
That's how stuff got done in the 80s for sure.
I remember Orange Whip being a drink cocaine at Orange Julius.
Okay.
Okay. Elwood gets pulled over on West Talcott Road at South Cumberland Avenue near the Nelson Funeral Home, which is still in business. You can still go visit that spot.
People are dying to get in.
Oh, but I'm bumped.
Thank you.
The hotel for men.
Says.
Yeah. The hotel for men, Transients Welcome, no longer exists. But
I love that.
The filming, this was a real actual happening. They had a picture of this building that they blew up with polystyrene foam bricks to make it look like it was exploding. That's pretty brilliant.
So what ends up happening? Does John Hughes see this film going, yeah, we're going to have all these films that I'm going to have take place in Chicago area?
In Shermer?
In Shermer. Or, you
there
know,
ain't no Shermer in Illinois.
There's a Highland Park. Those houses don't just grow somewhere.
The house that the band was staying in is at 51st Court between West 16th and 17th. That one's in Cicero. Those of you who don't know Cicero, it has its own interesting history, that's for sure. Murph and the Magic Tones are playing in the Holiday Inn, which is now a Quality Inn at O'Hare, so you can go there. Shea Paul.
I drive by that all the time.
Do you? There you go.
I do. Interesting. I didn't really grab all. Maybe I have to stop and, you know, relive history a little bit.
What song was Murph playing? You know, can no can see. You know, we don't get there. All right, so that's my
song. So a lounge act can afford to have, like, you know, five or six people in the band. Yeah.
A full horn section. That's what you get in a lounge act, right?
That is an expensive band, by the way, to run around with. That is an incredible. That's a band that requires dollars.
Contracts.
Apparently, they don't require money up front, though, because everybody seems to owe the money. So they're not very bright when it comes to handling money.
Well, they were drinking more than they were making anyway.
Typical musicians. It's about the music. It's not about the money. They're doing it for the love of it.
As people quit their jobs and get their lives in order, only to quit them again.
They're not worried about the trappings. That's one of the themes, right? Is one of the trappings of life is getting married, having a straight job. That's no fun.
That's what Carrie Fisher represents.
Mm-hmm. That idea of Jake getting married, that wouldn't have worked out good for Jake.
Wouldn't have worked out real well for Han Solo either.
Nope.
Apparently not.
Carrie Fisher going from man to man and eventually getting married, but yeah, it didn't work out so good.
Well, she was bipolar.
Yeah.
Empire Strikes Back, right?
Same year.
Same summer.
So she, wow. Know, she's just. This is before she starts her real smoker's voice for Return of the Jedi. I love Return of the Jedi.
Same summer as Return of the Jedi. And
what is
Empire.
It,
Empire. What is Empire? Yeah. Empire.
Empire was 80. Return of the Jedi was 83.
Yeah.
Same summer as Empire. Can you imagine?
Yeah, it was like a May-June 1-2 combo because I think what Star Wars simply released like on around the 25th of May, and then this was in obviously June. Yeah.
Wow.
So 2 months in a row, she's in the some of the top, you know, top grossing, top blockbuster films. This is like her 2 month block.
Let's see. The Nazis are rallying. Oh, yeah. Two really strong movies like this back to back the same summer.
Yeah.
She was doing really well for herself that year. The Nazis were rallying in Jackson Park on Lake Michigan shore, south of the city. Soul Food Restaurant was on Maxwell Street before Maxwell Street has been totally redeveloped. Ray's Music Exchange is not in Calumet City as claimed. It's on East 47th Street, south at Prairie Avenue. Palace Hotel Ballroom.
Just so you know, for people who grew up in Chicago, they know exactly where you're
This is in Chicago.
And for everyone who is not from Chicago, they might as well say it's on the moon because you're
it's
going...
It's meaningless.
it's on Google Maps there, Steve.
It's in Chicago. All of this was so Chicago. Dan Aykroyd was not from Chicago, but he loved the concept of Chicago and showed it off in this movie. Palace Hotel Ballroom on Lake Wazapamani, what a great name that was, is in the South Shore Country Club, South Shore Cultural Center on South Shore Drive in the city. The car chase on Lower Wacker Drive is iconic. So
oh my
iconic
God.
That when they closed down Lower Wacker Drive to redo it, it looks completely different now than it did in this movie. It looks a lot more like in the Batman movie. When they closed it down, they did a whole car chase scene with the Bluesmobile going through Lower Wacker Drive. I hate driving down there. I hate it. It's a maze. It's a big concrete maze, and there's no GPS. So if you don't know where you're going in Lower Wacker, you're lost.
And I still don't understand that. You're telling me that we can't put up some towers underneath there to kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, they can put up repeaters. Mm-hmm. I'm a network engineer. They can definitely put up GPS repeaters if they wanted to.
But they just want to do this for the out-of-towners, right? Make it a little more interesting. You never know where you're going
to
wind up.
It's like roulette.
You don't know which exit to go to. You hope that you remember which exit you're supposed to get to get out of Lower Wacker Drive.
Bet on black.
2020. You got the Richard J. Daley Plaza with that's where they got that Picasso, right?
Yeah.
And they do.
Yep.
Where the Chris Kendall mark is, Steve, every year during the holiday season.
This is such a Chicago movie. There's no doubt that this is the film.
Chicago film?
Yes, I said it with my accent instead of your silly Newark. Where are you from?
I'm from the north side of Chicago there, Steve.
You're from the south. You're from North Carolina.
Exactly. We don't have accents down there, Steve.
What about this music? What about these songs? What's your song... Do you listen to these songs as much as I do, John?
No I don't. this is the kind of music that, well, some of the kind of music that I heard in my parents' house when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Their musical tastes were really weird. It was like some R&B, some Motown. My dad listened to like singer-songwriter country and western stuff, and then they'd have like a fucking Bee Gees album or something like that. So it's not something that I listen to on a regular basis. But like you said, you can't not be moved by the music in this film.
Matt, is this your kind of music?
I certainly enjoy it. I would say, much like John, it was present in my childhood, and I certainly acknowledge the fact that most of the music that I listen to now, which is a lot of hard rock and metal, has its foundations in this music. So you've got to respect the roots of where your music comes from. And it's still great to this day. I mean, like you said, it's good toe-tapping music at the very least. You can put it on, and it's good. It'll energize you and keep you going.
From the first beat of this song, She Caught the Katie is just a toe-tapping, we're going to have fun song, isn't it?
It really is.
This movie, this music's from the 60s. And there certainly is, the R&B of the time. And we call it blues. There's certainly blues in there. But certainly this is made for a party, made to have a good time and sort of a celebration. So they're a cover band. That's what they are.
You're not wrong. The Blues Brothers is covering some of these great pieces of music from all of these different genres. And, so do you guys have a Blues Brothers cover band, a tribute band in your area? John, do you have a Blues Brothers band?
Not that I'm aware of.
Huh. Matt, do you have a Blues Brothers band?
It's very possible, but I can't say I've ever gone hunting for one.
Really?
Yeah.
Will, I
know. So a cover band of a cover band?
Dude, I never go out to bars. I'm the last person who would know about something like that here in Phoenix. All right.
So would you like the 4-in-1? 4-in-1, Steve. We can, like, the five of us, we can come together. We can form a band. Mission there from God.
I have to start working out quite a bit, you know, if I'm going to play the guitar.
There you go. You could be the Matt Guitar Murphy of our band. I love every Blues Brothers tribute band that I've ever gone to. I've gone to Scotland, and we went to a Blues Brothers tribute band there. Our local one by where Chip and I live is the Blues Brothers, B-L-O-O-Z-E, Blues Brothers. And Kevin Pollock, who is the Jake of that band, is just a wonderful musician, and I love going whenever they're in the area. I will go out of my way to go listen to the Blues Brothers because this is just fun music. This is joyous. It brings joy wherever they go. Give Me Some Lovin' is a fantastic song about, you know, living life. That's the joy of this.
This is all Time Life's, you know, let's review the 60s. Music. Steve, come on, man. This is a cover band. They basically picked a really good soundtrack as far as what to cover, but they're a cover band.
Including the Peter Gunn theme and the theme from Rawhide. Two different TV shows in there.
Product of the 50s and 60s television, too.
Plus the 30s with Cab Calloway with Minnie the Moocher.
They have the Sam and Dave 8-track.
Dave, 8-track, the 8-track in the car playing Sam and Dave. Soothe me, love it. That's my music, man. That is what I listen to. I play at least one song off of this soundtrack or the tour album pretty much every day whenever I listen to music, which is pretty rare.
So true story. Back in the early 80s. My dad bought a used car. It was a Buick Riviera, had an 8-track player in it. I don't remember all of the 8-tracks that came when he bought the car because they just left their 8-tracks in it. But I do remember there were like three of them. One of them was there a soundtrack? Was it Electric Cowboy?
Yes, I'm trying to figure out which we know.
So I don't think it was Midnight Cowboy. I think it was Electric Cowboy.
No. Midnight, it was a country, it was John Travolta was in this movie.
Yes. So it's like disco country. So that was in there. There was a Bee Gees, and there was a Sam and Dave 8-track too.
There you go. That is my favorite.
All right. So what you remember about 8-tracks is you'd be in the middle of the song, and it would switch to the next track. It's like, you know, da 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 da, don't don't, and then it would keep going in the same song. Urban Cowboy.
Urban,
yeah. Urban Cowboy. Urban there Cowboy. You go. There
and
it
that,
is.
And that came out in 1980.
Same year.
That is some quick Googling, Chip. Good job.
That's right. So yeah, he was actually, I mean, he was in Saturday Night Fever in 77, Grease in 78, and Urban Cowboy in 80, and then Staying Alive of 83. He certainly had, music was part of his repertoire.
And then Hairspray.
That's right. A little Hairspray.
All right. So let's get to our quotes, our favorite quotes. And when I say favorite quotes, I mean the quotes that I say at least once a week. Where's your, John, what's your favorite quote from this?
So probably the only thing that I use regularly, and I can't help but smile when I hear this, is from pretty early on where where Elwood tells Jake, I took the liberty of bullshitting you.
It wasn't a lie. It was only bullshit.
I have never used that one, but that is a great quote.
Matt, what's your quote?
Well, if we're talking about most common that I would use in day-to-day life, I mean, we're putting the band back together is one. We're on a mission from God is another. But the one that stuck out to me is just like a great one-liner. The guy had one purpose and one purpose only. In fact, he is called the Cheese Whiz. Did you get my Cheese Whiz, boy? My transient house.
Whenever somebody comes back from the grocery store. Yep. Will, what's your favorite quote?
So my favorite quote is, we've got 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark. We're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Hit it.
Yep. Fuck yeah.
Chip, what's your favorite quote?
Well, I like the one where, you know, you've got Belushi on his knees right in front of Carrie Fisher, and he's trying to explain everything in the world. There was, you know, locusts. There was, you know, it's just basically he's, and then he's like, all right, let's go.
I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire.
Slides the shades off and gives her the eyes, and then she just melts.
Yes. That's the eyebrows. Not just the eyes, the eyebrows, where he's moving his eyebrows around.
And you know there's a little true life in that. You know a guy like him with that level of charisma has gotten out of problems like that before, just giving like the, you know, oh, come on, it's me, it's me, come on, it's me. Let me go, it's me.
And Carrie Fisher will totally melt. That's the other part.
That's the only time after he gets the shades that he takes them off, right?
That's right. That's right. And he takes the jacket off in one scene. He takes the hat off in one scene. But once you've committed to a costume, that's it. That was me. Whenever I'm dressed up as one of the Blues Brothers, and I've gone between the two, depending on if I'm in a skinny year or a fat year. And once I'm committed to it, that does not come off during the course of the day. My line that I use at least once a week is, how often does the train run by here? So often, you won't even notice. I say that all the time. We're getting the band together. You on the motorcycle. You two girls. When I woke up this morning, I heard a disturbing sound. I say that all the time. That's a lot of entertainment for $2. And it's ladies' night tonight at the Palace Hotel Ballroom. But the thing that I say probably more than most is, shit. What? Rollers. No. Yeah. Shit.
Mine is the country and western one. We play both types of music. Anytime about what type of music they play both types. That's country and western.
Look, disco pants and haircuts. Yeah, a lot of space in this mall.
I'll give a little honorable mention. You know, Curtis asks the band, do you guys know Minnie the Moocher? And Rev goes, I once knew a hooker named Minnie Mazzola.
They broke my watch is a funny, stupid running gag.
Yep.
So I wonder if that was like a callback to, like, in the beginning, one of the items returned was a Timex watch broken.
Broken.
Timex digital watch broken.
Yeah.
Four fried chickens and a Coke, and speaking as a fat guy, that's pretty funny to say to a waitress.
And you know,
legs or wings? No, four whole fried chickens and a Coke.
Fuck yeah. That's my kind of meal.
How much for the girl?
How much for the little girl? Tell me your women. I want to buy your women. The little girl, your daughter, sell them to me. Sell me your children.
Oh my God, that part had me cracking up so hard. I was trying to build a model at the time, and it just totally fell apart because I was laughing too hard.
We will come back breakfast, lunch, and dinner if you don't join our band.
Oh, hey, real quick. I just got a message from Jeff. He wanted me to let you guys know that he says that Blues Brothers is an incredible, joyous ride that celebrates how awesome and talented Belushi and Aykroyd worked as a team.
That is now noted. It is for now for posterity.
That's Jeff Amy Johnson.
But since Jeff didn't show up for the show, I don't know if we actually get to quote him, Will. I showed up for Commando, even though I hadn't watched the movie. I'll throw in the Black Keys for free. I say that all the time. That's hilarious. And we already mentioned that Elwood says, who are you going to call, Jake? And that is Aykroyd then getting into Ghostbusters right after that. I didn't. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Someone stole my car. There was an earthquake. A terrible flood. Locusts. It wasn't my fault. I swear to God.
That was the best.
I love that.
He wins her over, he dips her for a kiss, and then he drops her in the fucking sewer sludge.
And the whole time, Elwood is crouching behind his luggage to try to avoid the gunfire. That's brilliant. That's brilliant filmmaking.
I want to know where Carrie Fisher got all of the weapons.
Yeah.
She's in Hollywood. She's got connections.
Because, I mean, the first time she pops up, unless I'm wrong, she has a fucking rocket launcher that she uses to blow up the building.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then wires it to blow the next day, too, but via remote switch.
And doesn't that rocket launcher make a Star Wars sounding
yes,
sound
it
effect
does.
Right
it sounds
there?
Like a blaster. It sounds like a blaster. It does.
That's brilliant use of 1980 culture right there.
I want to feel like she, when she was mentioning the you know, she's giving the whole backstory on why she loathed Jake so much, is that, you know, leaving her at the altar, like her dad had borrowed money from some people. Like, he might be somewhat connected, so maybe it's sort of a loose connection on how she's able to get
every favor. Yeah. He called in every favor from Mad Pete Moody. Yeah, great stuff. That's Southside Chicago, man.
I'm thinking Mad Pete probably has an arsenal. That's probably where she's getting her stuff from.
Yeah, suffice it to say, they're connected.
Yeah.
The unuse of unnecessary violence in the apprehension of the Blues Brothers has been approved.
That's kind of timely.
Mm-hmm. The band, Elwood. God. I love this. Yes, yes, Jesus H. Tap dancing Christ, I have seen the light.
And he is glowing like a like somehow he's a force ghost or something, Steve.
My favorite part of that whole church scene is, you know, it's not even just the overall exuberance of the audience, but they get to the point where people are like flipping and doing acrobatics through the air.
Right.
Yeah, they take that next level.
It's like assisted leaps and trampoline jumps and stuff.
I think they have to be trampolines.
Some of them are in slow motion.
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to capture that exuberance, and it's phenomenal. I love it. I've always thought that I would be really great at one of those Baptist church revivals and just jamming with that music, man.
I'll tell you one thing, it'll keep you fit, that's for sure. All the activity level, you will not have to worry about working out that day. Your Sunday workout is taken care of after that.
That was P90X before P90X right there.
Indeed.
CrossFit.
Johnny Horton's up there working with you.
Ah, John, that's a good one. CrossFit. Ah.
Well done. Some of my favorite lines are from Donald Duck Dunn. We had a band powerful enough to turn goat piss into gasoline is one of my favorite lines. And one of the other lines that he says is, why not? If the shit fits, wear it. But when Elwood is talking to Stein, he says, I know about that stuff, I've been exploited all my life. so Southside. Everything about this is so specific to Chicago that it makes me happy. I don't know if anybody else is as happy about it as I am. Let's see. Let's get our cult score on the scroll-o-meter. See how I did that, boys? See how this is not the cult film-o-meter, which I don't know what that is. But this
What's
is the
that?
Scroll-o-meter. So let's go in order. From those of you who showed up first. So, Will, give me a score on the scrollometer for this film.
I'd say 88. It's my first exposure to the film. I know it's a definite cult classic, and I know, like, my girlfriend knew it real well. Like, everyone I know knows it real well. My cat apparently knows it real well, as she just said. But it was pretty cool, I gotta say. Like, I mean, as I've said, it's not my music necessarily. It's not what I listen to when I listen to music. But I enjoyed it a lot, and it was very toe-tapping. And it was really enjoyable. And, I mean, the first two-thirds were kind of I mean, there are definitely highlights to it, but it wasn't like a continuous run of hilarity. But then that last one third with the continuous car chases and the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes nonsense, basically, it was just hilarious. And I mean, I had to put my models down. I couldn't keep gluing stuff together because I was just laughing too much. I was having a great time.
There you go. Matt Miller, what is your score?
It is a 90, and I'm giving it a 90 for two reasons. Number one, it's twofold. It's number one, it's the themes of it, and the themes are great. It's the theme of redemption and the power of music. You know, I've kind of already expounded upon that earlier, so I won't you know, repeat myself there. But on the other side, it's the fun of a movie. It's just a fun movie. There's lots of action. It's, you know, it's definitely a suspend your disbelief. But you know, coming into this, it's a comedy movie. You're not supposed to be taking it super seriously. But I mean, even down to like the final amassing of law enforcement on the county building. You got the SWAT team walking around going hut 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 hut. You've got army jeeps and tanks showing up. You've got, you know, armed cops on boats. On boats. I mean, it's just...
Well, that's real, by the way, here in Chicago.
I'll take your word for it. But, I mean, it's just... It's a good, fun ride. It's, you know, it's... It like Will had said, it takes a little while to kind of get rolling, but once it gets rolling, it's great. And, you know, I just enjoy, like I said, twofold. It's a great message, and then just it's wrapped in around a really, really fun movie. I was very apprehensive, as I noted earlier, coming into this, thinking that maybe it wouldn't be a movie that stood the test of time, but it does. So it gets a 90.
John Cohorn, John, I hate comedy Cohorn. What is your rating on the Blues Brothers 1980?
Well, I tell you, when I was first thinking about this, I was thinking it would probably land at about an 80. And there are a lot of reasons why this shouldn't work for me. But I had such a good time with it, I'm going to give it an 85.
Wow, look at you. Actually enjoying a comedy.
I know. A comedy that's like 2.5 hours long, which is way too long for a comedy.
Well, they cut it down for theater.
The theatrical release was 133 minutes, which is still over...
I think the theatrical was over 2 hours to begin with.
Yes, it was. Which is way too long for a comedy. I absolutely agree with you. Chip Hessenflow, what is your rating on the Chip-o-meter?
75, Steve.
Wow! That is a shocker, man. What gives it a 75 for you? Why not your 60 that you say every time?
Well, it's... There's a lot of classic parts to it. I don't think that, I don't know if 10, 15 years from now, it's going to have the same resonance.
With whom? With me? You are wrong, sir.
Well, I'm not with you, but you know, as you're picking out the movies for a lifetime, I would say that this is, it's a good film. You know, is it as good as Animal House? I don't know. But certainly, this better. Is we're at Pete Belushi at this point, mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, it's just too bad his life was cut short, yeah. and we're also dealing with Dan Aykroyd. You know, this is his first movie to write, and you know, from here he goes and grabs Bill Murray and they put together Ghostbusters, and I mean it just starts building from there. This is still where they're still kind of raw from Saturday Night Live. It certainly isn't the most polished work. You know, it is a who's who. And like I said, I still think that Carrie Fisher probably roped people into being in this. Like, oh, come on, it's a party. We're going to have a great time.
And so, adorable 24-year-old Carrie Fisher says, come with me. You go with her. Absolutely.
So I think that there's a lot of... You know, they're just now breaking out from Saturday Night Live. I mean, was it Fletch is probably coming out and Chevy Chase has left? But yeah, we're talking about there's not that much going on yet. But Saturday Night Live is just starting to kind of we're starting to move to a different type of comedy.
All right, so my score on this is 100. I think that this is a perfect movie. This is my movie. This is the movie that I watch more often than any other movie, including Star Wars. This is better than Star Wars, Chip. Stop making fun of me. I love this movie.
12 Angry Men and Blues
Brothers. And this. 12 Good Angry Lord. Men and Blues Brothers. Those are my two 100 scores on my chart because I love this movie.
And Captain Marvel's like right underneath it.
Yeah, Captain Marvel's pretty good. I love this movie. I love the idea of culture, the idea of white people and black people coming together, working together, being America. This is America, Chip. This is
for Absolutely. Me,
my idea of what Chicago should be. The coming together of these cultures, working together to get a goal, to help
isn't
children.
This, isn't to this the children. Version of Sweet Home Chicago? This is the version they play.
This is the version that I play every DJ gig that I've ever done in my life. This is the last song that I play. It is the Blues Brothers version of Sweet Home Chicago. The horn section on this band is just perfect. I love all of this music. I listen to this music every day that I listen to music. This is, they couldn't, what could they change? What could they have made better in this?
Okay, they could maybe, have tightened up the story.
Okay. Maybe 20 minutes of the story could have gone away. Yeah.
But they're a little out on the car crashes. They should have added a few more car crashes.
Yeah. Agreed.
Did you watch closely
it.
Enough to see where the wooden piece for the ramp was so that they could drive up over the other cars? Did you see that?
All right, so my first thought when seeing all those car crashes is, what did they do? Did they stop in between and get everybody out? Mm-hmm. I mean, are you going through a car crash to have another car come land on top of you? Because some of those like were landing on roofs.
Yeah.
There was a lot of great stunts in this. Go ahead, John.
Can we talk about, like, I know this is a cartoonish movie, but the one moment that just defied the suspension of disbelief is when they have the station wagons full of Nazis chasing after them,
and they backflip.
Not the backflip. I mean, that's ridiculous.
You're talking about the falling car, the Pinto.
The falling car. Yeah. So yes, they supposedly leap off the end of an under construction overpass, and right. then suddenly they're falling out of the sky from a height that is higher than a fucking skyscraper as Flight of the Valkyries play. It's funny, but it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So that's what it's for. And yes, they dropped that from a helicopter, and the FAA was really concerned that this object falling from the sky would be dangerous, but they let it happen.
What did they do? Was it like a Sunday morning or something like that when nobody is in town?
Yeah, it was a Saturday. And if you see where the scene where you see where it's falling into an occupied area. But yeah, they dropped it from a helicopter, and the FAA was really concerned about it. And it's hilarious. Yes, it's ridiculous. Yes, John. Yes, it's ridiculous. But it's so well done. And the guy turns to Henry Gibson and goes, "I've always loved you."
I was going
to
say, if it does anything, it allows for that extra FU to the Nazi leaders. Not only is he about to die, but his wheelman turns to him and does the deathbed confession. That totally makes it even more. I mean, he's already got the horror of facing his own death. Now he's got to deal with the awkwardness right before he meets his maker.
Right.
What hate group is going to run around with Nazi uniforms on? That is nuts.
The Illinois Nazis.
Asswipe.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Who doesn't?
I changed my Facebook profile picture today. I don't know if you saw this.
I was going to say, everything falling down suspends belief, but the number of police officers, army, firemen, all that, yeah, that's all reasonable
the
right there. And there's like a thousand soldiers.
Tanks. Tanks.
Boats.
Tanks.
I forgot about the boats. They're on the boats chasing after these guys too. Like, why? Why would that even be a thing?
Because they turn it turns green during St. Patrick's Day, Steve.
That's why. Okay. So this winds up as an 87.6 on the scrollometer, which is a pretty darn high score, sirs.
Well, I would say that a 100 seems to have skewed everything. Good Lord.
This is, This is probably the highest score that I've ever given to a comedy.
There you go. John, I hate comedy Cohorn, doesn't hate the Blues Brothers. That's the headline right there. Because John Landis is a horror movie director.
No, he's not. Animal House, Coming to America. Good Lord, man.
He did make a classic horror movie, but I've always struggled with thinking of him. It is a comedy, but it's also got that fucking phenomenal Rick Baker transformation effect.
Right.
I mean, that changed the game in so many different ways. But I've always struggled with thinking of Landis as a horror director. I mean, yes, he's done it, and he's done it very well. But I always look at him as a comedy guy.
I absolutely see Landis as a comedy guy. I absolutely think of him in terms of Animal House and Blues Brothers.
Animal House.
Mm-hmm. I mean, seriously.
And Kentucky Fried Movie too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That one's easily forgettable, though. I mean, that was fun. That one goes into the category with Amazon Women on the Moon. You know, silly sketch comedy style, it's forgettable. Forgettable stuff. Blues Brothers, not forgettable. That I've run my entire life on this. My high school yearbook, my senior year, I am pictured in the yearbook dressed up as Elwood Blues because it was a skinny year.
any number of athletic events or anything, there's always a Blues Brothers group out there. So. Look for the Super Bowl or whatever it is.
The Bulls. The Bulls had the Blues Brothers group that there was a part of, and we've got our local tribute band. There's
Steve. What is one of the Blues Brothers' favorite baseball team? There, Steve.
The White Sox.
Probably. The team that they keep forgetting won a World Series, Steve.
Right. Oh, they won a World Series? Oh, we
they
forgot.
They did. In the last 20 years, they've won a World Series. But everyone else, don't worry. They'll leave it out again next time they name all the champions of Chicago.
Right. The Blues Brothers do share a certain color aesthetic, at the very least, with the White Sox.
That's right.
Black and white.
That's right.
And the Nuns.
The Penguin.
Okay, boys, you don't know this, but we went to go see a White Sox game with a nun from my school, and Chip walked in and he was like, okay, we're gonna sit with a nun and we're gonna watch a baseball game at the White Sox. And she walked in and she goes, I need a beer. it was a great day. We had a lot of fun that day hanging out with Sister Mary Jo. Oh man, this has been great too, hasn't it? This has been fun.
Yeah,
lots.
Definitely. Yeah. Probably an encore, Steve.
We should do this more
a little
often.
Jailhouse Rock. A little Jailhouse Rock.
You're gonna go with Elvis instead of Old Landmark?
I just remember at the end of Blues Brothers they played Jailhouse Rock.
That's right. Awesome. Thank you for being a part of this. Thank you for being a part of this community. We've gained a little bit of a community here coming together to do these party casts and talk about fun movies. Tell me again, Will Nexi, where can I find more information from you?
Facebook.com/group/372pages or facebook.com/WillNexi with a capital N, two I's.
Matt Miller, where can I find more about you?
Twitch.tv/TMayhem. That's TEAMMAYH3M.
John Cohorn. John, I hate comedy, but I like the Blues Brothers enough to do this show, Cohorn.
My nickname just keeps growing and growing.
Unlike your hair. Oh!
No, it grows just on the bottom side of the head.
That's right.
Just like Chip's back.
Mine just migrates toward the back.
So where can I find more from you, John?
I can be found on Twitter at The Horror Aisle or at modernhorrors.com, where I write about all things freaky and scary.
Like John Landis movies.
Or John Landis's son. Hey.
Chip, where can I find more from you?
Hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes there, Steve.
because we're doing a daily Sherlock Holmes reading during COVID-19 lockdown, which has been so much fun.
And sometimes we just laugh and laugh and laugh.
Yeah, and sometimes.
And we thank our college professor for keeping us, you know, on the straight and narrow there, Steve.
Yeah, Professor Pamela Bedore, who is so much smarter than us and keeps us. She would not be a part of this, thank goodness, because she would just keep us in line on this show. And you can go to our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. Give us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflow there, Steve.
We'll see you in the future.
Go Cubbies there, Steve.
Oh, you are out. I'm not talking to you no more.